And as always, we use Jitsi chat. Okay, Kalia, go ahead.
Sure. We've got the Internet Identity Workshop coming up, April 16 to 18 in Mountain View, California. We are committed to accessibility, meaning if the prices on the website are too high and you really want to be there, we're always willing to work with you. And we, just for folks who are listening, who are thinking ahead, we also have a diversity inclusion scholarship kind of program that's ongoing. But I think they're all, I think they're all taken for this one, but like there's even deeper support if you need it to be present. And then, the good thing is, IAW has expanded with some regional events. We have the Digital Identity Unconference Europe coming up June 18 to 20th in Zurich, which is not the most expensive city in the world. We make sure we have good, cheap places for people to stay. One guy even camped on the lake last time and took the tram to the conference, which was cool. And we have, a regional event in South Africa the third week or fourth week of September. Unfortunately, it conflicts with TPAC. And we're working on an event in Thailand for the APAC region in January 2025. So we're supporting regional conversations. The global conversation, though, is still at IAW twice a year. So that's it. That's it for me.
Thank you, Kalia. Excellent. All right. In that case, let's proceed to our main event. So we're excited to have Ildiko, who is our new co-chair at the VC Edu Task Force, presenting today on some of her work in the European learning model. Ildiko, over to you.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, excellent. I have prepared a little bit of, well, a couple of slides and some demo credential that I would like to show. So first I need to share my screen. Apologies. Too many tabs open. And here we go. Okay, this one. Can you see my screen?
Yes, we can.
Okay, excellent. So because you are probably all familiar with the ongoing CTDL micro-credential schema mapping exercise, I wanted to share with you an interesting observation from the exercise that I carried out when I was mapping our European learning model to the synthetic spine that at the time was CTDL, but since then we also have one at Tech's open badges schema. And what I found particularly
Before you dive into the detail, I'm fairly sure several of the people on the call are unfamiliar with the mapping project. So if you want to say a few words about it, no worries.
Sorry, that I just presume always that I'm the one who's lagging behind. beg your pardon. So this is an activity that was kicked off, or an initiative kicked off by Credential Engine, and it is a micro-credential schema mapping exercise that basically sets out a relatively comprehensible subsection of credential schemas and try to determine how the various existing standards, data models interpret micro-credentials. And we were doing that by having subsets of mapping, and we have a so-called synthetic spine, which is basically starting with one model, presenting the classes and properties that are relevant from the point of view of the mapping objective or object. In this case, I don't know how large the screen is for you to comprehend, but we have assertion, micro-credential claimed, micro-credential specification, the issuer and the owner slash offerer. And these are the aspects by which we compared our various different models and schemas. And as we started mapping these subsections to each other, it was my personal first observation, and it would be very interesting to hear if we have the colleagues in the call who also participated. I don't know if Phil is there. I don't know if the OneAttack colleagues are there. I think it was Nate Otto. I'm not entirely sure, but somebody will probably leave a comment in the chat while I'm speaking. I'm blind to the chat, by the way. But very many terms, particularly the higher level terms, are either identical or very similar. These would be titles, descriptions, etc. Something that very early on came to my view when I was doing my mapping of the European learning model is how we approach the positioning of this long discussed animal called skills and competences. We all agree that this is the core and the heart and soul and the common denominator or common currency between the skills supplied by education and training providers and non-formal learning and informal learning to employability, employment. And we need to crack or find a way to communicate skills and competences in a way that is understood the same way by employers who are seeking specific skill sets and job seekers or individuals or lifelong learners who are trying to express their skills and competences or who are looking for courses and learning opportunities to improve or acquire new skills and competences so that they are more demanded or in better position to look for better jobs, new jobs, upskilling, reskilling, et cetera, et cetera. So we all agree in the importance of skills and competences, but the difference seems to me that the positioning of skills and competences in the various models is different. And it seems to me that the other models mapped so far have a different approach to this. And yeah, actually, you can see here the specifications that are mapped. ELM is ours, but we have OneAttack, Open Badges, Open Badges by OneAttack, and some other very interesting models. So when we come to presenting skills from various different frameworks, you won't see ELM mentioned here because our approach to skills from these different taxonomies and frameworks come from a different angle, which is learning outcomes. In Europe, we actually consider learning outcomes to be the core of learning achievements, and it is learning outcomes that can document in further granularity related skills and competences. And to understand this better, I actually prepared a little micro-credential example that I can show you in real time what it looks like in reality. And in the introduction, if you got the invite to this meeting today, you have links to the various council recommendations that are targeting the European Qualification Framework recommendation and the micro-credential recommendation. So here, the way we interpret credentials is that every credential obviously has a recipient, an owner, and this owner can be identified by various ways, by dates of birth, place of birth, identifiers, email address, registered addresses, etc. Every credential has an issuing organization, the organization that applies their qualified or advanced electronic seal to the credential. This is what makes it legitimate and transferable from one EU member state to another. So because we have something that we call the eIDAS regulation, since this is a European regulation, this basically means if I have a digital credential that is signed by this eIDAS compliant electronic seal, it cannot be denied legal relevance in any other EU member state. So my degree, if it's issued by an accredited European university, for example, must be accepted in other EU member states as well. But where credentials get really interesting is when you start talking about the claim. And we distinguish between different types of claims because the European learning model is a very complex and agile and flexible model that met the demand from all the various education, training and learning providers in Europe that would provide learning in a more informal, non-formal way or formal, various different sizes, sectors, domains. So we can say that a claim can be an achievement, and an achievement would be a more complex claim that contains further information about the before-mentioned learning outcomes. But learning achievements that contain learning outcomes can really only be verifiable if they are also linked to assessment. So for every other use case, if I attend an online course, for example, but I don't get assessed by the end, I just get to the end of the course by skipping through the pages. Nobody can check if I actually read it or not, but I got to the end somehow. Then I can get a credential that has an activity claim. And an activity claim, although it is also a claim, it has different properties to describe this. So an activity would have probably a volume of learning, a start and an end date, but primarily this is just describing an activity that a person has participated. This could be a workshop or a conference, but it has nothing to say about the person proving the acquisition of learning outcomes. What does this and what makes an achievement claim a bit more robust is the related assessment, which again is a claim that could be a standalone claim of an assessment. We know such examples for transcripts of records, for example, where the credential itself is just a list of subjects with grades. And here we also allow the users of the European learning model to describe other properties and attributes of the assessment, the type of assessment, the reliability of the assessment, whether it was an exam that was supervised or not, was the person identified or not, online or presential, etc. We supply a property for the or class to describe the grading scheme. So when you actually see a pass or a 5 or an A, you can understand what that actually means. So you're able to compare a grade from within a grading scheme to your own national or sectoral grading scheme. And we always have a section of other related information and other properties. Now back to the achievements, where I think this, the difference is quite prominent, is these learning outcomes are coming from something that we call specifications. Because every time a person would undertake a course, they would see in advance what the course would offer in terms of anticipated learning outcomes. But it's really important that when a person receives a credential, it also shows their achievement of these learning outcomes. And when the learning outcome is described, it can have just one brief description, and it can also link to individual learning outcomes, which is the, I don't know, fourth level of granularity, where a single achievement could have multiple references of multiple learning outcomes that are reusable and very often are just a smaller atom for the composition of other types of credentials. And this is also something that we foresee to play an important role when we also tackle stacking, which is something we also know is a big challenge. How are we going to allow individuals to combine credentials from different sources to just prove and reinforce their skills achieved from multiple sources, and one of which source could be the use of existing taxonomies. We see these being referred to in other models as well. In our cases, our go-to taxonomy is ESCO, which is the European Classification of Skills, Qualifications and Occupations. And we can either reference concepts from that taxonomy, or if we like, or the user likes, they can also link related skills from other external qualification frameworks or skill taxonomies or competence frameworks, whatever. So I know this is probably a little bit fast, but hopefully with the illustration of the actual credential, this is kind of it's making sense how we break this down. And I do wonder if any of the colleagues from the other models or schemas would have any reflections or questions, or in fact, if anybody else from the audience would have any questions or reflections, and if anybody shares my view of the difference in documenting skills and competences.
Thank you so much, Ildiko. Phil, go ahead. You're in the queue.
Yeah, I just wanted to say hello, that I am here. And yeah, I've been managing the DESIM mapping project that Ildiko, that prompted these remarks from Ildiko. And one of the things that I've learned by doing several of these mapping projects is that one of the hardest things is trying to align different models, different sort of entity relationship models, different ways of viewing the domain that you get in the various standards. And I think that's one of the things that makes the sort of thing that Ildiko has been talking about. I was going to say difficult, but yeah, I'm not sure if it's difficult, but yeah, it highlights the importance, or Ildiko's comments highlight the importance of, yeah, how many different ways there are of modeling what seems like a fairly simple, simple idea of asserting that somebody has certain skills. You know, do you have a model where you assert the skills directly, or do you have a model where you assert that somebody has a learning achievement which has certain learning objectives which were assessed, and therefore you can infer that the person has the skills? And that makes this sort of schema mapping quite difficult at times.
Indeed. Deb is also in the queue. Would I have to do anything to let her speak, or can you just speak up?
Yeah, I can just speak up. Liko, did you want to reply to Phil before I speak up?
Well, I completely agree with what he said, and I just wrote in the chat as well that it is very challenging, and we already established, was it last week or 2 weeks ago when we had the advisory group meeting, that it would be very interesting once the exercise is complete or nearly complete to have a conversation between the people who did the work, share observations, and zoom in on some of the not so straightforward aspects, like the learning objectives and the learning outcomes, and see how people see the differences and what they have learned, because I certainly learned and took lots of notes that I shared with my colleagues, and asked if something would be anything for us to keep in mind for future versions of the ELM, if we would like to expand or introduce new properties or relationships, for example. I don't know if the other colleagues would share my observation on that, but I guess that's still to be found out.
Thanks. So first, thank you so much for bringing this topic to this group. This is an excellent group to provide insights on this type of mapping. And this is exactly what we at Credential Engine, but more broadly, the C2DL advisory group have hoped for is that this type of mapping raises a lot of questions and a lot of dialogue. And one of the things that I'm reflecting on that isn't really a question, it's just an observation, is that Elm and ESCO work really well in a lot of depth because these connections between, for example, the credential and the competencies are well-defined and well-agreed upon, right? So it's an ecosystem of EU providers who have agreed to this structure and the types of assessments and even the structure of this, of the skills taxonomy, right? Compared to C2DL and some of the work we're doing in the US, which is trying to lay credential transparency as a data layer on top of a very messy landscape where there is no particular agreement about the relationship between credentials and competencies. So, for example, if you list learning outcomes for a course that's in a program, maybe that course teaches those competencies, but as you pointed out, Ildiko, that's not the same as assessing those competencies or assessing them at a specific level or having evidence of mastery. So I guess in summary, my observation is that ELM and ESCO are really great for a specific agreed upon ecosystem, and how you can map that is going to be different than how you can map and a very disparate and ill-formed ecosystem. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. Should I wait? I'll wait my turn with a deeper reflection. I think we have a cue now.
Go ahead, Ildiko. I think it'd be easier if
okay,
you had a chance to respond after each speaker.
Very happily. So yeah, absolutely correct. Europe is very organized from the point of view of coming up with these smart overarching classifications and the European learning model that can be, wouldn't say pushed, but recommended by the European Commission. But I think one of the key advantage of this of ELM is that A, it's a recommendation, and B, it's abstract. So when we say related skills, then the related skills can be ESCO or else. So on one hand, we can guide our users who are not familiar with the other taxonomies, but want to get started somewhere. On the other hand, we want to provide freedom to those users who have their own domain-specific taxonomies, and they don't want to get lost in ESCO that has 38,000-plus skill concepts, because in certain narrow niche occupation-specific domains, certain areas of skills don't have much relevance. But we will always have the transversal skills, the digital skills that are probably applicable to many areas of where we work. And this is just a very soft way of educating users and applying a mind shift, particularly formal education providers who can't distinguish, like you said, that an activity is not necessarily the same as a credential that refers to an achievement that was assessed and as such is verifiable.
Thank you. Makes sense. Phil, I think you're up next.
Thank you for the presentation that you've described here. I think it reflects several comments, both that Phil Barker and Deb have made, which is that unfortunately in the U.S. we don't have a national qualification framework that would help align different educational institutions around a given description. However, rich or thin it might be. And I was just wondering to this group if there has been any outreach to the professional communities within higher ed in the U.S. I'm thinking in particular of AERA, for example, where one might get more likely, well, possibly at least, more interest in and attraction to the idea, since at the present time there is little enthusiasm from the activity that at least I think we see around us in the U.S. for any kind of nationalized or centralized approach to identifying learning outcomes and skills that higher education institutions in the U.S. would follow. So I'm curious to ask the question to the group if organizations like AERA, and there may be others that I'm not thinking about that would be equally or more relevant, are groups we have as a community tried to reach out to and bring them into this conversation, showing them the outcome of this particular effort, for example, to point out the challenges that that are being particularly manifest in the U.S. and which other places have made various attempts to try to do a perhaps a better job. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. And anyone who wants to reply, please feel free to jump on the queue. My question to Ildikó, or actually, Ildikó, you first, if you have anything to say in reply.
Actually, I would like to reflect on what Phil said, because it does have, I'm not from the U.S., but I think what you just commented also resonates with some of us in Europe. Higher education institutions are the slowest to take up the standardization. And this is one of the reasons why I think the micro-credential schema mapping exercise was a very genius idea to just narrow the scope to something that is so popular, so trendy, and it's kind of easier to capture, because formal education is always going to be harder with or without the qualification framework levels. But when it's something smaller, we could see with the success and the spreading of the use of open badges, standardization is valuable. And if there is a need, then a good solution will hopefully spread. And then from that on, it can get deeper and more complex.
Thanks. My question to Ildikó is, so what kind of, twofold. Can you talk a little more about, I think it was called the synthetic spine. How was that put together, and then what does that do? And what were the hard things about this mapping? What sort of challenges did you encounter?
I may not be the best person to answer, but I am happy to give a shot, and then Deb or Phil can verify my understanding and explanation is correct. The synthetic spine was not something, like, there was nothing at first, and then there was a synthetic spine that was equally distributed. So CTDL provided the synthetic spine for two or three of the areas of mapping, and ELM to another two. And there was one left empty when I think when I finished my exercise. But basically, whatever we call the synthetic spine, it's just the first model to be selected. And then the second person to come will load their class and property concepts to map, and looks at the synthetic spine, which is the existing list of classes and properties, and you just say, okay, this is matched, this is the same, identical, similar, transformed, opposite or inverse, and then as more and more schemas are mapped to each other, a picture emerges in the strong agreements, the less strong agreements, or where there might be a mess or lack of coordination or common understanding of approaches. And I think that was one of the most fascinating aspects, to see concepts that I have never seen before, but obviously made sense either in context or for a future version of ELM for me.
Yeah, let me jump in on the synthetic spine. The way that DESIM works is that it aims to create many-to-many mappings through a common synthetic spine. So each schema or standard or specification that you put into there maps to this common spine. And through those pairwise mappings, you can infer mappings between the different schema. So if schema A has a property which is the same as something in the spine, and schema B has a property that is the same as something in the spine, then you can infer that those two properties from schema A and schema B are the same as each other. Likewise, if, you know, one's the same and the other's an inverse, or if they're both similar, you can make certain inferences about the pairwise mappings between the terms in the different schema by the way that they are both mapped to this common spine. And as Ildikó says, the way that we create this common spine is that it is a synthesis of what's there in each of the schemas being mapped. So the first people, whoever's the first organization to map their schema, as Ildikó says, there's nothing there, so they simply add their schema as the spine. And normally we arrange it so that it's the biggest schema that gets added first. Then when somebody else comes along and does a mapping of their own schema, they're mapping just to the spine. But if they have a property that isn't represented in the spine, they add that property to the spine, which is how you build this sort of synthesis of all of the different properties that are available in all of the different schema, which is what gives you this sort of, yeah, I think what Ildikó was appreciating is this sort of grand overview of everything that everybody in the who's created standards for the domain has thought is relevant. I hope that was intelligible.
So much better than my my description.
Only because I've had practice.
Yeah, but it's so true that what's being added to the original synthetic spine is really important to just enrich what's there first, because just because a schema is smaller than the initial one providing the first version of the spine doesn't mean that this smaller schema wouldn't have elements that don't exist in the other. And I think this is something that I look forward to revisiting, on one hand to check all those that are definitely the same across the board, because that's also very informative. What do we have in common that everybody agrees across the board, and what are our unique insights or use cases that make our schemas different and maybe inspirational to the others? What can we learn from each other? Is it just different interpretation of something that we actually have a common understanding of, just expressed differently? Or are these different things for what reason?
Thanks. Anyone else? Deb?
So if you're not watching the chat, I was just pointing out to Laura that this can be used for any schemas, and the tool itself is open source. So, but what I wanted to say is that I love the schema mapping tool because it makes it look like things are going to be really tidy, and then when you do the work, you realize things are not really tidy. So, you know, it seems like, oh, okay, it's a mapping tool, and we'll put things in it, and they'll line up, and we'll see whether or not they match. And then we'll have a tool where we could even have, like, automated crosswalks between different standards to translate between them. And that might be true. But I think that in a lot of cases, like what we're learning here, is that doing the mapping is just the beginning of the process, because the process is really about the discussion and the differences in how the mappings can be used.
Thanks. Anyone else?
Just want to reflect on that as well. I'm sorry. But yeah, it's so true. But also the crosswalk, as you, like you mentioned, that could be straightforward, but maybe something that this exercise will teach us that sometimes it's a multi-step crosswalk. So we can still find the same thing, but it's not an obvious match. It's maybe a route of a match. And that's something that I look forward to exploring further.
Absolutely. This is a really exciting field. And I think a lot of us are watching this project with great interest. Does anybody else have any questions or comments about subject of mapping credentials in general or this particular project? Or any questions for Ildikó?
This isn't a question for Ildikó. It's something that I'd like to highlight from Ildikó's presentation, something that struck me while we were doing the mapping, which is the European learning model putting assessments very much to the forefront. I think in other schemas I've seen that they're often just sort of sitting in the background, and you kind of assume that they're there, but you're not told specifically that they are. But I think Ildikó made the point during her presentation, and it was certainly clear when we were doing the mapping, that if there isn't information about an assessment, how the skills were assessed, then the assertion that somebody has a skill is less trustworthy. And a way of representing those in the verifiable credential, I think, is quite important.
Yeah, and in fact, we highlight to our implementers the importance of distinguishing between these two, because ultimately this boils down to the quality of the credential, and we do not want low quality credentials to be circling in the ether used for job application if not used correctly. Needless to say that we can't stop anybody from doing anything as long as it's format compliant. It's possible to issue an activity claim in a credential that somehow tries to refer to learning outcomes, but according to our model, it's not possible to reference learning outcomes and skills unless they are achievements. So it's almost like an implicit or a recommendation of using the assessment if you want to reference skills.
All right. Thank you all. Phil, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd just like to also couple, if you will, the assessment emphasis that I think, Ildikó, you've correctly and clearly articulated, along with Phil Barker, the value of and central importance of in judging the quality of a credential. With the associated actual evidence that is used to make that assessment, for which the assessment sum, in whatever symbolic or other form it is presented, is also pointed to from the credential, so that a third party who looks at it sees what the assessment is, but also what the individual has. At least examples of what the individual has done for which the assessment is on which the assessment is based. Because I think the two of those are really tightly coupled and helpful, particularly for individuals in communities that may not be familiar with necessarily with what the outcomes are that a particular credential is asserting, and gives them a better chance to see that for themselves and perhaps learn from that process. But I just want to emphasize that coupling. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. Anyone else? Go ahead, Carrie.
Yeah, I'm sorry if I missed this. I was zoning in and out for a little bit of time. Are the mappings considered to be just for specifications or standards that are using our JSON-LD specifications, or is it not stringent in that way?
We can map any type of specification, so long as it has a concept of elements or properties.
But they don't. Yeah, so it doesn't have to be linked data. It could be any spec.
No. We've mapped XML-based standards, and the sort of the catch-all format that we can import the standards in is a CSV where you just list the properties and their definitions.
Okay. Thanks, Phil.
Thanks, Carrie. Anyone else?
Kalia has her hand up, I think.
I think that's from the announcement, but feel free to just speak up, Kalia. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. If there's no other questions, thank you, everyone, for an excellent discussion. This is a really important topic, and we look forward to hearing more developments on this. And talk to you next week, everyone. Cheers.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Wait. Laura, did you want to say something, or you were just...
No, just a mistake.
No problem. All right, bye all.